This is that other sports shit. Let's go. One, ladies and gentlemen, we are back after a little bit of a prolonged absence, but you know what? Life happens. You have to take some time off. You have to use up that PTO and all that money that we're getting from ESPN. I mean, wait a minute. We're not. We just took time off because we can. So, folks, it's good to be back. You're hanging out with myself, Jesse Thomas. I got on the other end my friend of all friends, my bro, Mr. Jason Valdez. Jay, how you doing, man?
You know, it's fantastic to be back. I feel like I jinxed us with the beginning of the last pod because I did the whole we're ahead of the schedule, we're ahead of where we usually are at this time of the year. And then we took like 3 weeks off. I believe it was at least
two weeks.
It was a full two, so this would be three. This will be. It's been two full weeks between the last pod and the new pod. Jesse, quick Twitter update. Two for you here. The first one, shocking surprise. Che Rollins is smoking weed now.
Oh wow! Well, I know. Hey, Shay does what Shay wants to do.
Yes.
As long as Shay is being safe and not out there making too many more babies, I say do what you got to do, buddy.
Is he going to become a long-haired hippie now? Is he going to become the person he hates?
I can see that happening. You know, somebody's literally, I don't know. I mean, Shay is a chef, as like some of you know, like Shay likes to cook. He was worked at several restaurants. And food serving places. I think the Food Network is seriously missing out on some talent, some on-air talent by not getting down there and filming this young man cook up some food with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. This is prime time. I want to watch this type stuff. I want to watch this guy make some chicken fettuccine while periodically going and now taking bong hits.
See, I love where your head's at because I kind of see the same thing. And I see they do, like, I think FX has television shows that are similar where it's like, this is what happens in a kitchen. This is what happens behind the scenes in a restaurant. But I like more of the let's do a reality series type thing with Che. We catch him in the morning. We catch a little wake and bake. Maybe he has a little fucking, a little whiskey in the coffee. And then he goes in, he makes incredible meals, right? He's inspired. He sneaks out. He has a little heater with the boys, with maybe some of the prep cooks in the back. And he just tells a little story here and there, and then we see how he ends the night. Maybe he's at a bar. Maybe he's at a fight. Maybe he's in a fight. Like, we never know. That's what you said. Che's going to do what Che wants to do. That's why we need multiple cameras following this man at all times, almost like Conor McGregor on The Ultimate Fighter, that level.
100% accurate in that portrayal right there. He needs cameras on him at all times. One, for the entertainment value, because I guarantee people everywhere would be fantastically entertained. Two, if you work for a network and you are on camera doing something you're not supposed to do, most likely the network will bust you out and bail you out and you will not do any jail time. So that doubles
it the turns fun. Into material. They use it. It turns into material. You're right.
Yes.
Right. Incredible call. All right, Twitter update two, @TeamToss21. It's thriving. It's blowing up. We are getting followers left and right. And so please follow @TeamToss21. Also, shout out our boys at Variety Sports. We can't forget them. The VSN, the VSN Network. They're thriving. They're doing great. Shout out Fat Boy Fadeaway Sports. We got to show them some love. We got to show the Twitter homies some love, Jess, because although you are still away from Twitter, although you are still doing the thing where you're not coming back for a while, we still got to show a little bit of love to the guys, right?
Yes, definitely. Variety Sports Network, Variety underscore network, or Variety underscore sports underscore.
You don't remember this stuff yes. because you're not online anymore, but
I know,
we'll just retweet it from our account.
I don't know nothing. And Fat Boy Sports, I'm telling you, we do need to work through some, you know, some communication, lines of communication. We need to get some cross promoting going on. Maybe get some of those guys over here. Maybe yes. one of us go over there and do a little something. Yes. I think it would be great.
I think I can arrange this now with the powers that I have on social media.
I think it would be amazing.
I wield all the swords now, so I'll cross those two bitches together and we'll figure it out.
Like He-Man when he's just the prince. And then you he says fucking, power Grayskull, and then boom, he's He-Man.
The fucking SJ. True sword of Eternia.
Yes.
Raise it to the sky, and you got to turn the cat into battle cat.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of that goddamn cat right now. I've watched a lot of He-Man too the last like 18 months with this 4-year-old. Like between the old one that they have randomly on YouTube and the new one. Shout out Kevin Smith for putting that together. I enjoy it. Okay, so Jess, we're doing a lot. We're bouncing around here. I'm gonna focus. Yes. I'm gonna bring
this,
it
this
in.
This happens when we take time off. So we
we're having fun, and the problem is it's gonna be difficult for us to rein this in because we can do a lot of material. The stuff we've missed the past few weeks, we're gonna try and stay on that narrow road and continue to move ahead. Let's start with last week's co-main event, UFC. Very interesting stuff here, Jess. I want to talk about Nunes. I have a Nunes question that I have not asked you. I have not prepped you for. So I'm teasing it. I'll bring it up here in a moment. We definitely want to start with the co-main event there. Some people saw this as the main event. You and I were texting about this. I told you if we were going to do a prediction show, I would have picked Dariush. I believe you said the same thing. Charles Oliveira always does Charles Oliveira things. I love Charles Oliveira. I also feel like I pick against him a lot. I wasn't picking against him a lot when he was on that title run. But in the past, because he's had so many fights in the UFC, it might be breaking even at this point. Just one round fight. Charles Oliveira wins. Give us some thoughts.
Head kick TKO. I did. I picked Dariush. A matter of fact, I believe that you and I have been on his bandwagon a little bit as of the last, like, maybe, like, six, 8 months.
Trending up.
Definitely trending up. I think that this fight was, now that I've watched it and seen, and you know, we know what happened, I feel like it was a mistake. It was a mistake putting these two in the same cage together.
Ooh.
Because now what happens is Dariush's run that he had put together is squashed. And it's hard to come back because Oliveira was already a top five guy. He was just out of that long title reign. And this guy is supposed to come in, beat him, and kind of cement his place as like the next guy up, so to speak, the runner up in that weight class. And then he runs into a literal buzzsaw called Charles Oliveira. And Oliveira took full advantage of everything that he had and the fact that Dariush was a little bit maybe a deer in the headlights. A little bit, didn't really get off the blocks. How many other sports, quotes can I use? he was flat. He came out flat. He didn't look very good. And Jay, you and I talk about it a lot. Sometimes when you have these up and comers, and Dariush is not an up and comer. He's been around for a minute, but this is like his first big push. And sometimes when you get that first big push and you are main staging it, so to speak, sometimes the lights get a little bit too bright, gets a little bit hot under the collar, and sometimes your performance ends up like his. And especially when you're taking on such a savvy, solid, straight across the board vet, former title holder as Charles Oliveira was.
I think Dariush was in a unique spot. One of the takeaways that I got from the fight was when it hit the mat, they seemed to stalemate each other. And I think if Dariush was going to have an upper leg here, that was going to be where it's at. We all know he's got pop in his gloves. We all know he's got great knockout power. But standing with Charles, I thought before the fight would be a mistake. Trying to go toe-to-toe with him, I thought was going to be a mistake because he just has such an arsenal there with the strikes, with the kicks, with the knees, with the high input, which is the pop in his gloves as well. So they hit the mat, and it just seemed to me like they were just, again, at a stalemate. Dariush wasn't able to advance. Charles was not able to move in any type of aggressive jiu-jitsu type scenarios. So it just seemed to me like there wasn't much going on there. Early head kicks from Charles. I mean, from the jump, there were early head kicks. You can tell. I don't know if the early head kicks rattled Dariush or if it just put him in a scenario where he's like, oh my God, I am truly fighting the elite. And maybe I am the bridesmaid, never the bride. But Charles caught him. I mean, Charles caught him with that head kick. Like you said, Jesse, he kept throwing it. Which, you know, you don't want to say he was spamming head kicks, but the amount. He dropped Dariush. He was able to finish Dariush with the strikes. And Dana made it a point to say after the fight, you know, he kind of tiptoed around, let's do Charles versus Islam again, followed by, yeah, you know what, actually, what else is there to do? I personally, I'd like to see that fight again. I do feel like Charles is always going to be an underdog in that fight just because Islam is so big and Islam is just coming down and might also be trending up. But styles make fights, and we'll see what happens. Maybe Charles is able to catch him early. We shall see. Any follow-up thoughts on this fight, Jess?
No, I mean, I think more importantly to me is where does Beneil Dariush go from here?
Yeah.
Who does he fight?
Again,
like I said earlier, it's tough being the up-and-coming guy, and then, like, a lot of these up-and-comers, they get a face like, I don't know, a guy maybe one step above them, maybe one step below them, you know, so a loss doesn't really hurt them so much, or, you know, a win kind of, you know, promotes them a little bit more. This was a really weird fight to make for me personally. I thought that stylistically it didn't really make much sense, and obviously a fight's a fight, so it can go either way. But I always kind of thought in the back of my head, if Dariush loses this fight, what happens to him? Because now he's lost to a former champion who is only like a fight or two away from when he was defending. And this puts Oliveira very much back into the title contention.
Yep.
Whereas if Dariush would have won, he would have been there. But now if Oliveira loses, he just trots off the savvy veteran who just lost to the up-and-coming guy. He has nothing really to lose, and his wheelhouse is clean.
Yeah. Charles is at that elite level where trading wins and losses at the absolute highest level right now isn't necessarily going to hurt him.
Not at all.
As opposed to, like you said, a loss here for Dariush really sets him back.
It does. I really feel like now the most important question is for Dana White and that brass in the UFC to figure out what do we do with Dariush. So
I think the thought process as well was Dariush wins this fight and he is a stylistic, I don't want to say nightmare, but could give Islam some fits. We may not ever see that fight, or if we do, it's definitely not going to be for at least another year or so. I agree with you, and I wish I had an answer for what they do with Dariush. I'm not sure. That division is pretty much booked right now, as stacked as it is. It's also booked. So I don't believe Dariush goes back of the line, but if I am Dariush, if I'm his management, I'm on the phone going, I'm available for any fights. If anyone falls out, Connor falls out, I'm available. Dustin falls out, I'm available. Anyone fucking falls out, I'm available.
100%.
It's the only way that you're going to be able to keep yourself, you know, keep the iron hot, if you will.
Well, that and the fact that just my last thought on this is that Dariush doesn't have a lot of promotional backing in the first place. He's not necessarily
not sexy.
He's not the not sexy, sexy fighter. So and so this loss, just like that's like a double loss for him. It's really a bad situation. You're 100% right. His management team needs to have been on the phone, you know, last weekend calling for fights.
Dariush, here's the best advice that I can give you. This is free. Grow an afro and dye it a bunch of colors. Get a bunch of tattoos on your chest. Paint your nails. Start smoking weed on a podcast. Dude, you will get fights hella quick. Trust me. Amanda Nunes. So I don't know how much time we should spend on this fight itself, Jess, because the fight was what it was. It felt like an overmatch, a mismatch, if you will. This young lady that fought, whose name is already escaping me, I don't believe she was even ranked in the top three. And you can see why. Amanda kind of did whatever she wanted here. She dictated the fight. I turned the fight off at some point in the fifth round because I was so anxious to see Taylor versus D Teofimo Lopez that I didn't want. And I also did not want to be spoiled by goddamn social media, Twitter, which you are smartly avoiding. So I turned it off in the fifth round. I didn't see she retired until I start getting texts and my buddies are like, holy shit, that just happened. So I didn't find out until after the fact. So any thoughts on this fight, Jess? Did you watch the whole 25 minutes?
I did not watch the whole 25 minutes. I watched like maybe a total of 3 minutes of this fight, and it basically was enough to get me through the entire 25 minutes of this fight. Irene Aldana, very tough competitor, very tough lady. She's been in the business for a minute or two. I do not believe that she was ranked even in the top five. I could be wrong, but I don't even think that she was ranked in the top five. I think that somewhere down the road, when you become so dominant as Amanda Nunes was and is. That you reach that status where it doesn't matter who you fight, you just kind of run out of people because you've already cleared your division like two or three times. And so that's where, you know, these fine young women are getting opportunities to fight for titles. I'm not saying she doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying that, you know, Amanda Nunes done cleared out the division like twice, at least twice.
Yeah. No, seriously. So
you kind of got to jump back and be like, well, who the hell can we have her fight? All right. Well, this chick ain't no slouch. We'll put her in the title fight and see what happens. And that's what happens when you do that with such a tough, you know, competitor as Amanda Nunes is.
We did a women's MMA Mount Rushmore a few episodes back for our combat sports listeners that missed it. And we put Amanda on there. It's almost like you got to put her, you know, right in the front. The George Washington spot, if you will. Is it George Washington?
Yeah, it would be George Washington. George Washington gets Amanda Nunes treatment.
Here is my question, Jess. And before you answer it, please, I want you to take a deep breath and think about it for half of a second. Because I think it's easy. And I think that my initial reaction was, this is what I think. The totality of both careers, and I know one isn't over, but it's definitely in its twilight. When you take Cyborg and you take Nunes, who do you think overall is the better fighter?
Can we take out the part where I firmly believe that Cyborg was juiced up for like the first 10 years of her career?
That's part of what made her so dominant. That's what made her Cyborg.
I love Christian Cyborg. I think that she was truly the face of women's mixed martial arts before people knew that it was so important to have a face
that women
of
were fighting
women's
the
mixed martial arts.
What's her name
comes by, she's all cute and pretty. And
you talking about Misha or Ronda?
No. The first one that Cyborg knocked out.
Oh, Gina?
Gina Carano, yes. Gina Carano comes by. She's got a sparkling record and a sparkling behind and a sparkling set of teeth. And they say, hey, we need to make her the face a women's mixed martial arts while we got a chance to do so. And the truth be told is that Cyborg deserved that all along. She was the true face of women's mixed martial arts before Carano, before Rousey, before Misha, before all the rest. And for that, I would place her above Amanda Nunes in that first spot. That's why my number one spot would go to Cyborg, just because she was there at the very beginning.
So I think the argument against Cyborg is, you know, Amanda double champ, which is something that you do have to take into account. In their one fight, Amanda knocked her out. In some people's opinion, that is going to be the ultimate denominator, right? That's going to be it, where they just go, nah, but if you want to put them head to head, they fought 1-1, one got knocked out, one didn't, so this is where I go. And I'm okay with that. I don't know if there's necessarily a right or wrong argument here, or as much as I think this can trend towards LeBron versus Michael. Like, what do you place more value in? You know what I mean? I personally, and maybe it's just the fucking old man in me, I just lean more towards Cyborg. I just look at the totality of the career, what she was able to do. She was the female Mike Tyson before Amanda was. And I mean, credit to Amanda, you know, she beat everyone they pretty much put in front of her. She had a window where she beat everyone they put in front of her. But Amanda also struggled those first 8, 10, 12 fights or whatever. I believe she struggled in Strikeforce, and she struggled that first part in her UFC. So I think when you want to go and say, hey, let's put her next to the most dominant champs of all time, some of those guys, they didn't struggle the early part of their career. Some of them did. You know, Anderson did. Anderson had some losses, one or two losses early in his career. But to me, again, I just think it kind of depends on the way, which way you sway with the argument. I go more towards Cyborg. And again, maybe that's just the old man in me, but I just look at the complete package. And like you said, going back to Strikeforce, going back to Elite XC, going back to all these different divisions, going back to what she was doing in Japan, the whole, all she is a striker. So she goes and she wins all these high-level jiu-jitsu tournaments to show everyone, no, I'm not just a striker. I'm an incredible grappler as well. She just has an incredible career that, okay, it may have peaked. It's not over. Is her peak as high as Amanda's? I don't know. Amanda does have the two belts. So I don't know. It's a great and a fun and compelling argument, and I'm glad that we have one in women's mixed martial arts because it's deserved as long as women have been fighting.
Yes, it is. Definitely.
Jess, you want to talk a little box? Oh, yeah. I'm going to wrap it up there because we can continue with, hey, what do the girls do next? What about Juliana Pena? Juliana Pena has gotten so much run on social media and podcasts the last 4 or 5 days that I am of the, like, we shouldn't talk about her. Let's not talk about her. She's done enough. She's like a Chael Sonnen.
Can I just say that there's nothing about her to talk about?
There it is. I like that. She can go on all these podcasts and talk a bunch of shit. She could talk about how she wanted to disrupt Cyborg's retirement. Yeah, that would have looked real good. That would have made you.
Yeah, that's super classy, Juliana. Yeah. That's super classy. You're really doing women's mixed martial arts a favor by attempting to try and get at the goat of the champ while she's in sitting there trying to retire.
In her defining moment.
Super classy, Miss Pena. Super classy. I can't wait to see you fight next. Nope, I'm not really.
She is laying two belts down in the octagon. There's probably, I don't know, no fighters that have ever done this ever, male, female.
That's a good point, too.
And you want to go and start hooting and hollering from the side of the cage because you're not getting your rematch? Honey, sit down. Let's chill for a second. Let's have a drink on the house. Let's have a drink. Let's have a biscuit. Let's calm it down, dude.
Stand up. Take some pictures in that nice dress you got on.
And let's keep
it moving. Do a quick twirl.
Go stand over by Daniel and ruffle some feathers.
Come on now.
That's it. No more, Jess.
Did you hear she was like?
Oh, you're done. Oh, you're not done.
I'm not done.
You're done. You're done.
I can't.
I'm pulling the plug on you.
I only have nasty things to say. Because she had to bring up Anderson Silva in the mix as well, talking about.
Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, it's like you said, you gotta
look. The women's division, that division, the featherweight division, is going to live on. There's going to be other women. Matter of fact, Dana White and the UFC brass has already signed 3 top prospects from different organizations to come in and just simply compete. And so, you know, the UFC is not going to fizzle out their women's divisions just because Amanda Nunes retired. When Anderson Silva retired, when Chuck Liddell retired, when Randy Couture retired, when George St. Pierre retired, when all these guys retired, did the divisions go to shit? Mm-hmm. No. Did they get a little bit weaker? Sure. But there's always another wave of talent that will come up, and the same will go for the women's division.
It's their job to find and create stars and hope that they can find another superstar.
I'm just waiting for Ruby to get her title. That's all.
That means she's next. You already know where we're at. You already know where this show's at. We're all about fucking Loopy in 2024. Just
hell yeah.
Fucking around. All right, Jess. I wanted 2 quick boxing takes here. Did you see any of this Floyd Mayweather stuff? I did not even bring this shit up in the text. or any of the pre-show shit. Did you see any of this Floyd Mayweather shit?
No.
Okay, because you're not on social media, so you're missing it. Okay,
but talk to me about it, please.
Long story short, he boxed John Gotti the third in an exhibition fight on a Sunday night, and he had people pay to walk to the ring with him, like if you like an all exclusive experience. And the fight ended with a disqualification because I can't even remember. I couldn't even tell you why there was a disqualification, but at some point there was an absolute melee
after the fight.
After the fight. Yes. So you might have heard of this. You might have heard this.
Part. Yes.
And then after the fight, there's just 7 different videos on the Twitter of girls fighting, titties out, drinks being thrown, the John Gotti's security versus the money team security. So you're getting 2 big hosses just fucking chunking them dead in the middle of like the venue. The ring, people were going into the ring and smoking vapes and fucking shooting videos and taking the microphone in the ring. It was total fucking disorder, Jess. Total disorder. My question after telling you all of this, how the fuck did Floyd Mayweather make $100 million, $120 million, $80 million, $100 million, $80 million for like 6-7 years in a row? I mean, probably somewhere around $500 million. But for some reason, he has to fight John Gotti Jr. the third on a Sunday night and have people pay to walk with him to the ring.
My friend, I have no answer for you with that. I think that
this is what I'm implying.
Every good run comes to an end, including a guy like Mayweather, who his whole thing is like, you know, his whole thing for the past, like, what, 5 years or so, maybe a little bit longer, has been basically like, hey, man, I'm done with, like, actual boxing. I'm not going to go and compete actual boxing. What I'm going to do is do these free show boxing matches where I can make a shit ton of money, like, right off the bat and then walk away in some, you know, some backyard event and still make $40, $60, $80 million from it because my name is Floyd Mayweather. I think that this is just representative of the fact that his run is coming to a very close and decisive end. Like, his name and brand will continue to live on, but he's used it so much that people are tired of it, and this is just kind of what happens.
It's mind-blowing to me that in 2023, people are still paying to boo Mayweather and see him get knocked out. He truly took the pro wrestling mindset, the blueprint, and just still cashes checks on it in 2023.
Why not?
But I just think you gotta fucking be broke. You're either broke or you're like, this is free money and I got nothing better to do. And if somebody wants to pay me $1 million to spar for 6 rounds, I'm a dummy to turn it down. That's the only thing I can think of. But if you've made $500 million in 8 years, do you really need that extra $1 million? I believe you have generational wealth, my dude. Like, I cannot fathom someone gambling away even $50 million. Like, what are the bets you're making and how many bets are you making a year to be like, dude, I gambled away $50 million. I guess it's possible, right? I guess if you live in Vegas and you're Floyd Mayweather, it's possible. But, like, why are you fighting on a Sunday night and charging people to walk to the ring with you unless you're broke? That's the only thing I can – there's nothing else that computes in my brain, Jess.
To me, Floyd Mayweather is still just simply trying to live on. The money he's making is good.
He's the athlete that can't let go.
Yes, he's the athlete that can't let go. He's Emmitt Smith in an Arizona Cardinals uniform.
I love what you're
saying. You know what I mean? He's Bruce.
Oh, he's Joe Namath in a Niners jersey.
He's Joe Namath in a Niners jersey. Like, He's that guy. And the fact that he knows he's that guy, yet still can make money, to go back on piggyback off what you were saying, yes, he's gonna be like, fuck it, if I can go spar and still make $30 million or whatever
He's
or
not making
more.
30 million though, Jess. Let me. That's why I'm going with a low number like a million.
Well,
Because I just can't see a way that
even if
I.
it's even if for this Gotti Jr. fight, say he's making 5 mil,
I think that's 4
somehow
million
you,
too high.
and I don't think that's too high because Mayweather's people are brilliant. And
And that's a
those
very good point.
managers,
That's
those
a very
accountants,
good
those
point.
people, they know what they're doing.
It's the money
So
team.
if anything, I'm saying 5 mil in, is a
You might be
small
right.
number, but
God, you
we'll
might be
put
right.
$5 million down there. Say he got $5 million, plus he gets some of the gate, plus he gets some of the concessions, you know, or whatever, the merch. He's making some money. He still gets
Jess,
to go in there, beat
I'm gonna hit
somebody
up
up
our
for
boy
six
Steve
rounds.
Kim. I gotta hit up our boy Steve Kim and ask him if he thought Floyd got $5 million for this fight. I just don't think he did.
I'm sticking with 5 million. That's
I think
my
that's
number.
fair,
I
though. I
think it's a
think it's
good
a fair
number.
argument. I don't think it's a ludicrous argument. Like, I don't hear it and think that's outrageous. Like, okay, you're right. He's got some good people. He's got some good accountants. They're the money team. He could probably figure out a way to get a $5 million bag, I
And
guess.
if you wanted to dig into personal stuff, I know that Floyd likes to flaunt his family around, and he likes to flaunt them in, you know, very lavish things. But how good of a relationship does he really have with his family, his girl,
Oh
his
wow, you are
kids?
getting deep.
So
He's got a great relationship with his
let's throw
kid.
all of that
I know his
into it.
oldest. I know his daughter. He's got a great relationship with his daughter. I
Let's
know that.
throw all of that into the mix and then say that maybe he doesn't have such a great relationship with them. So now he's basically a man way past his prime, still though able to go out and collect a couple $1 million here,
Chasing that
five
high,
million dollars
Jess.
there,
He's an old
chase that
athlete
high.
chasing that high. He's Emmitt Smith and a
There
Carlos
it goes.
Hayes. Chasing that Sunday 1 o'clock high. I still got it in me, coach.
That's in that, to
Goal
me,
line, goal
that's
line,
where he's
coach.
at. That's where he's at. But you know what? To flip that all the way back around full circle, the man's still making millions and millions of dollars for basically nothing. Like you said, it ended. I watched some of the Battle Royale that I did. Now that you brought it up, I didn't even know what was really going on when I watched it. You bring it up. I did watch the aftermath melee, and I'm sitting there thinking this is ridiculous. Like, punches are being thrown. The ref tried to call off the fight. Punches are still
The
being
ref's
thrown.
weird.
The
The ref, if you watch the ref, Jess, he stops it, and there's a moment
and
where
then
the
he
guy's
stands them
referee, he
back
stopped
up.
the fight. Yeah, because he's like, I'm not going to get punched in the face by these dudes. Like, I'm not about to get punched by these dudes, even though I just stopped the fight. When you would think, I'm so used to UFC referees. I'm used to Herb Dean just diving on a motherfucker. Like, no, the
Right.
fight's over. That boxing referee's like, nah, my check's cleared. Y'all go ahead. I'm about to step up out of this bitch.
I mean, just the melee in itself is insane, and you just see like all sorts of people from like Hoboken, New Jersey to like Miami, Florida, stepping in and just like throwing blows and
There's
stuff.
a
Like
lot of
I don't even know.
FBI,
Like
a
it
lot
was
of
like a
full-blown
cross country
battalions.
melee, like something on Super Smash Bros. Or something. You see a kid playing Nintendo, you know, and it's just
Love it.
nutty stuff happening. But the fact remains is that he made money off of that. He got to walk away from it basically unscathed, even though I'm pretty sure he threw a couple very errant punches after,
Hey,
you
the
know,
best punch of the entire fight was thrown after they stopped it, and he hit
which I
got him in the
believe
fucking
actually
right hand.
rocked. I believe it actually rock got
Yeah,
him.
it did.
So
One
that's
million
even
percent.
worse. You're the dude pursuing Mayweather at this point in time after
After
he's being
DQ.
held back. You go and attack him, and he hits you with an errant punch that almost puts you down. That's pretty damn embarrassing.
God is like, I gotta feel his power before we get out of here. I gotta feel his power. And bing, oh shit, I felt his power. All right,
Oh.
now I see why this motherfucker gets paid $5 million for an exhibition. All right,
Oh.
I'm fucking put that one in the can, Jess. Teofimo Lopez versus Josh Taylor. I was so excited for this fight, Jess. I was not rooting, but I was actively picking Josh Taylor, the Mexican. Mi gente and me will not allow me to root against the Hispanic person ever. Unless it was like Oscar De La Hoya before he fought Vargas. That one didn't count. That was like 1998 or some shit. But yeah, you know, this one was unique, Jess. I gave Taylor the first two rounds. I thought the third round was pretty close, but I gave it to Teofimo, and then I gave the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, the ninth. Teofimo just turned it on. You could tell the difference in the power. And what surprised me, Jess, was just the overall skill set. Like, I went into this firmly believing that Taylor was the better overall boxer, and Teofimo proved me wrong, not only with the boxing, but with the pop, with the power and the gloves, with the big right hand and the sneaky uppercuts. Did you watch any of this fight, Jess? Did you catch any of this, the highlights of this fight?
No, I didn't catch any of these, any highlights, nothing.
Any of this. This
I'm,
is
I'm disappointed right now.
Fight,
very disappointed. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. ESPN Plus, if you got some time, check it out. Teofimo Lopez versus Josh Taylor. Even though I'm saying it's pretty one-sided, it's still a fun fight. Maybe towards the end, like maybe like 10, 11, 12, Lopez really starts putting it on. Maybe at that point I stopped watching. Maybe I might have went to bed. But I, at that point I had Teofimo ahead so much. And then Teofimo does the Mick Foley retirement. Comes out after the fight and he says he's retired. Says he's done. Says he's hanging him up. He is very young, Jess, so I do want to put it on record. I do not believe he's retired. This, to me, feels like your traditional boxing retirement that you get. He might have another two retirements in him after this retirement, but he's too young to be done. I would not be – I wouldn't be surprised if we see him again before the year ends. How about that, Jess?
I was actually just about to ask you how retirements happen in boxing. Like, do they typically come back? I know that in mixed martial arts, most mixed martial artists, at least from like the UFC portion of things that I've watched in my history of watching the UFC, most retirements pretty much stand. There's been a few on occasion that haven't, but most stand. So boxing, when I heard that he had retired, I got my ESPN Plus app and it pops up, says Teofimo Lopez wins. I was like, wow, okay, that's cool. I thought at the time, I was like thinking that the other guy was picked to win. He was the favorite. Lopez comes out and wins. I was like, oh, cool, man. And then like literally like 30 seconds later, another little, you know, pop up on my phone says Teofimo Lopez retires in the ring. And I was like, wait a minute. Didn't this guy just win? Like, he just won. Like, what is happening? Why is he retiring? So you're saying there's no way. Like, give me a percentage.
Yeah, here's what I believe. I believe that he, at this moment, is having, I don't want to say a moment of clarity as much as he's having a moment of, the check's cleared. I've made a decent amount of money the last X amount of years. I don't know what fights are out there anymore that are going to truly test me, even though I think a rematch with Loma would be fucking incredible. But not only that, I think he's got a little bit of family drama. I think there's a little bit of stuff going on. You know, he's got the dad trainer, and, you know, usually the dad trainers within those first 20, 30 fights, there's some type of drama, there's some type of something. So he's just like, you know what, I don't know if I can do this with my dad anymore. Maybe he retires and comes back with a different trainer. That might be very advantageous for him if he is trying to stay or go to that next level, the elite level, if you will. Not saying he's not elite now, just saying if he's trying to be like, you know, pound for pound type elite. I just don't think he's retiring. I don't buy it. You know, even though he said it, I don't buy it. And again, I'm going full Mick Foley retirement. I think he comes back. He fights Loma or whoever Loma just lost to in that fight that I thought Loma won. He takes that fight. Was it Haney? Who did he just lose to? I can't remember. I can't recall offhand. But there's still fights there. But more importantly, there's still enormous bags. And I have a hard time thinking that these guys are going to walk away from $5, $10, $12 million paydays. I just have a difficult time seeing it. Now, again, if he's got 25, 40, 50 in the bank, and he's not a lavish spender, he's not like Floyd Mayweather gambling $30 million a year, then he's good, you know? The fucking generational wealth is there. You can live off that interest. But we shall see, Jess. We shall see.
It's always interesting because sometimes things like this happen and you just don't really know what's going on in the background. You know, it's usually the background stuff. In this case, Teofimo Lopez does seem like he's a younger guy. He just won a title. He's ready to kind of walk off into the sunset because he got a to defend the title. Most guys want to start a legacy off of that title and build upon that. For a younger guy to have won such a big fight and just simply walk away. And, you know, you're probably onto something because, you know, most people when they retire, not a lot of emotion. Lopez, very emotional, very emotional. Ring, very emotional. Strange to see. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this young man, his career coming up.
Jess, the last time we did a podcast, seamless transition into the NBA, we were at a stage where the Heat were up 3-1, and we decided we are not going to wait another week. We're just going to do our NBA finals picks right then and there. We had no clue that Boston was going to wake up and reel off, what was it, three straight wins?
Three straight wins.
Take it to a game seven and absolutely shit the bed. No reason for us to talk about Boston because the last show we did a lot of Boston talk. But salute to them for coming back and making it seven games. I still think they should fire their coach. It looks like they're doing the opposite. They're surrounding that coach with really good assistant coaches. I believe they brought in Sam Cassell and somebody else. So that they're bringing
smart move. I think that we actually discussed that last podcast that we did. We were talking about does this guy get another chance, or do they oust him for a well-known head coach? I said I think that they keep him because the players seem to like him. But we discussed the fact that maybe they bring in some well-known assistant coaches. And then, look, bingo, on the button, that's what they do.
And again, and I think that the big swing is they win those three games. I think if they lose in five, it's a totally different story.
Oof, good point.
That's what I think. I think that he's more than likely he's fucking swimming with the fishes, if you will. All right, so Jess, I hate to do where old Jay was right, but I predicted Nuggets in five. I wanted to lean. I really remember, if you recall, I said six, and I was like, is five disrespectful? Does a gentleman sweep really feel disrespectful? For me, it wasn't about the disrespect as much as it was just this is a complete team. This is a better team versus a scrappy, Heat culture type team. I said it when we did the pre-finals show. They're going to have a difficult time scoring with Denver because when Denver wants to have those 120, 130-point nights, they can. Now, they never really scored like that, but they were able to put up those 100, 110-point games, and you could tell Miami was struggling just to get to 90, 95. I know you didn't see the tweet, Jess, but I tweeted at the end of the third game after 12 quarters. I don't think I need to see anymore. I feel more confident than ever in my Denver in five pick. And here we are. Last night, Denver wins in five. He stuck around. He made it interesting. Give me some thoughts. Let's start with the Miami Heat and the Heat culture. Two Eastern championships and two finals appearances in 4 years. Jess, give me some thoughts on the Heat.
Yeah, matter of fact, two Eastern Conference championships that they should never have even probably been in, especially this year being they were a play-in team, I believe.
Yeah, play-in team down against Chicago with 2 minutes left.
Yes. And then they come in and, you know, they do the unthinkable and they get all the way through the mighty Boston Celtics.
You can even go back. It was the Bucks run.
Yeah, that's right. They were the ones that they knocked off Giannis, the Bulls,
the Sixers.
Yeah, I mean, the Miami Heat's run to me was far more incredible than the Nuggets run. If you look at based on teams that they played, the Heat were always the down team. They always were the dog. And their run was against the absolute best of the best the Eastern Conference could throw at somebody. And somehow Heat culture prevailed. Eric Spoelstra did his wizardry coaching on the court and just was able to rally the troops game in after game in after game. And Jimmy Butler had some of the most heroic playoff moments in almost in playoff history. Just crazy moments in playoff history, put up crazy points. And then you look at some of the just the tail end guys that would come off the bench, bust down 12 points in a you know, a third quarter, a fourth quarter.
That Martin kid showed up against Boston.
Yeah. So and then you even had throwback games from Bam Bam. Like, Bam's out there just tossing down dunks like Bam, he's 20 years old again.
And Bam was just crazy.
And then you even got the old man Udonis Haslam coming into the game and playing some minutes. Kevin Love got a lot of PT.
Kevin Love got a lot of PT.
So, you know, I'm just saying that what the Heat did with the players that they have against the players that they played against is far more incredible than what the Nuggets did. And I don't want to take anything away from what the Nuggets did, because you can only play who's in front of you. You don't get to pick your opponent. The opponent picks, right? Like, the opponent wins their series. They move on, and eventually they play you or whatever. So the Nuggets only played who they played, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do, which is win and be dominant in those wins, and they were. The Miami Heat, though, I just giving them full-on credit to Heat culture and Eric Spoelstra and that group of managers and coaches on that sideline. They did incredible things with that team.
Do you think the Heat have a chance of making it to the finals next year?
No.
With the same roster? Yeah.
Not at all.
It's just impossible.
No, there's no way. But
what if
Boston will get better? Giannis will be back and healthy. I mean, there's a multitude of the Cleveland Cavaliers, I believe, will be a better basketball team than the Miami Heat. Okay.
Ooh, that was a hot take. Let me go here with you. And you know, I'm sure you'll love this one. What if some miracle happens and the Heat are able to get Dame, which I don't think happens, but it seems to be a hot topic on all the talk shows here.
You know, I know that Dame had mentioned something about Miami, but I think
he said it. I watched the whole clip.
He also mentioned Brooklyn, and yeah, he also mentioned another team. Also, honestly, the Portland Trailblazers, I don't think there's any chance in a cold ass hell that they trade Damian Lillard. And honestly, I think Damian doesn't want to go anywhere. I think that he, I honestly believe that Lillard is of the old school nature, that he wants to do something great with this Portland Trailblazers team, even if he knows in his heart of hearts it's never going to happen. I think that his loyalty to this franchise is going to basically like end the rest of his career. He will not win championships. He will not get the recognition that he truly deserves as such a great basketball player.
If I'm going to bounce all around right now, Jess, if you're the Portland Trailblazers with that third overall pick, would you trade that pick right now for Brandon Ingram?
Yes, that'd be a great trade.
And now all of a sudden you got Brandon Ingram, you got Dame, you got the young core guards they got. Feels like all of a sudden they got a little bit more leverage. They're a little better.
You got the guy that got drafted higher than Nikola Jokic.
I just fucking love the fact that after they win the championship, everyone starts tweeting out the fat Jokic photo, as well as when he got drafted during a Taco Bell commercial. And I'm pretty sure that Taco Bell commercial had someone in it that was getting drafted. Like, they had the second or third overall pick in the Taco Bell commercial as Joker's getting picked. Like, there was some moving parts there.
But I actually saw somebody toss out an old interview when Joker was still, I believe, high school. Maybe he was playing like a high school all-star game somewhere here in the States. And he had like fucking pink eye. Like, he couldn't even open his eyeball. And when he did, it looked disgusting. And it was like red and like gooey. And he's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I'll play in the NBA. I don't know. It's not really what I'm thinking about right now.
He's like, I need fucking eye drops. Don't ask me about the NBA right now.
The guy's like, I got some shit from, like, you know, Serbia or wherever the fuck I'm from. Like, I got to get rid of this first. So, like,
it's a fucking weird bird flu in my eye right now. It's a Serbian bird flu in my fucking eye. I need eye drops. I need an American doctor ASAP. Give me the fuck
second favorite interview that I've watched. Joker is all over the place, by the way. We all know that. Second favorite one I watched is it was a young kid. I don't know if he was like a high school sports guy, just getting a little, like, you know, cut of a young Joker, when he said, "Hey, you picked number 15. Why'd you pick number 15?" And Jokic looks down at him and goes, "Well, I was chubby and I couldn't fit into any other jersey besides the 15 at the time. So that's why I picked
that's
it."
That's great. That's fantastic. The only XL we have for your little fat ass is a 15. Put this on it. Go fucking run some sprints. Jesse, right now, is there one player on the planet you would trade Jokic for?
No. I think Nikola Jokic has proven himself to be the best basketball player currently standing.
You would not trade him for...
I would not trade him for Giannis.
Oh, that was my next one.
I wouldn't trade him for AD and LeBron. I wouldn't trade him for nobody. I wouldn't trade him for Wembanyama.
Stealing all my heat right now, brother. You're stealing all my fucking heat. Every question that I have in the fucking chamber, you are just snagging them. You're doing Neo moves around them and shit, Matrix moves. Okay, so, and I can't even put a little bit of fucking cream filling on top of it. So you would not take Wembanyama for the next 7 to 10 years? Again, we have no idea what the fuck's going to happen with this kid. And maybe he ends up like the OKC kid. He hits a fucking NBA floor and blows his knee out when he starts playing with real men. But I mean, but he's been playing with real men because he's been playing in France against like 30-year-old dudes that are smoking cigars. hitting bagels vapes and shit. At halftime. Hitting vapes and bagels at halftime.
Is Luka an assistant coach over there or what?
Of course he is. Luka, hey, Luka. It's just a bunch of vapes overseas. Him, Luka, fuck, all the boys. They're just vaping.
Fuck.
Hashtag vape life. So, okay, so there's nobody. There's absolutely nobody.
There's not one player. We also talked about it last week, or the last podcast we did. We talked about Jokic and the fact that he's been a great player basically his entire career. Like, if you trace him all the way back to his rookie season, he's been a triple-double machine ever since he stepped foot onto an NBA hardwood court. It's just that he's always played for the Nuggets, and the Nuggets have not always been a very good team. And then when they got good, all their good players got hurt, and it was left up to him to try to win a championship, which is near impossible. Even Jordan had to have help winning championships. LeBron had to have help winning championships. You cannot expect Nikola Jokic to go onto that court by himself with a bunch of scrubs and win an NBA championship.
And so, also in a league where it's about super teams.
It is about super teams, or at least having the type of camaraderie that this Denver Nuggets team has. Mm-hmm. Like, the stuff that you watched, I love watching when teams win championships, how certain players react, how coaches react, like, you know, just that overall situation. You know what I saw last night? I saw Jokic stand on the court for nearly a minute and a half, making sure he shook every single member of the Miami Heat's hand.
Yeah, even if they didn't want to.
Everybody, there were guys, obviously you don't want to. This guy just beat your ass.
Yeah. May not ever make it to another finals. This may be
You may never see another finals again.
And this
because
guy
of this
that
man.
Just beat your ass is like, great, great series, guys.
Yeah, he's like, hey, guys. Have a nice summer. Hey, we'll see you next year, guys. Hey, enjoy your summer.
Guy just single-handedly beat your ass.
I saw interviews with Jamal Murray, Brown, Jeff Green. I saw all these guys, Aaron Gordon. You know what they all said? They all said the same thing. We don't do this without Jokic. He is the most unselfish player in the league. He doesn't care about scoring points. He doesn't want to be in front of the media. He does not want to be the superstar, heading up the team's, you know, logo and all that stuff. He just wants to be on the court, win games, make good, smart plays, score when he can, rebound when he can, get assists when he can, and make his other teammates look good. Every single player said that.
Well, Jess, this is my whole thing when we've talked NBA the past 10 years. I think it really does come down to camaraderie. It really comes down to, do you know your teammate at his best and his worst? When you guys are on the court and there's 5 to 7 possessions left and you're down 2, you're down 5, you're up 5, and the lead is slipping, and you know there's guys that are tired, and you know there's guys that just don't want, their booty holes are tightening up, they ain't gonna take that shot. Do you know where to put the ball for this guy? Do you know where this guy wants the ball? Do you know this guy's deficiencies? I'm not going to give him the ball here because he's going to probably more than likely turn it over. Do you know the defensive deficiencies? The only way that you create this is by playing in multiple games together. And when you do the Phoenix Suns thing and you go, we're going to stick KD here next to Booker, so that just means they're going to win championships. No, it don't. We're going to stick KD here in Brooklyn next to Kyrie, and that means they're going to win championships. No, it didn't work. It's difficult to create super teams these days. Oh, Kawhi, PG-13 in LA with the Clippers. They're just still many motherfuckers were picking them to win the championship this year, and I'm like, why? Why? They don't play. There's no camaraderie. They don't know
each other. They only play 30 games apiece each season.
They don't know each other's best, and they don't know each other's worst, as opposed to Jamal, Michael Porter Jr., and Jokic. They know each other's best, and they know each other's worst under this coach because they've just been playing with each other for so long, and they've been practicing with each other for so long, and you build that camaraderie. And then you take into account all the good stories, right? To me, the Jamal Murray story is just as good as story. And we, you know, I love Clay to death, but it's almost like the same thing with Clay. The guy had what could have been considered a career ending or a career cheating type injury where you go, man, that guy ain't never going to be the same. And he's better than he ever was, which is wild. And he took and made so many big shots throughout the playoffs and in this series in the finals when it mattered. I mean, but that again is the ultimate confidence in their coach and Jokic by knowing, oh, I've played with this dude for so many years. I've known this. I played in so many games with this guy. I got confidence. I ain't worried about it. I know he's going to make this shot. And he did. Another quick joking thing here, Jess. It's the hot topic today, and I hate to do it right now, but everyone else is doing it.
Here we go.
So why not? Is Jokic a top five center of all time today, not even adding anything else to his resume?
Well, he's not above Shaq. He's not above Kareem. He's not above Wilt.
There's three right there.
He's not above Russell.
It's four.
He's not above Duncan. If you want to place Duncan as a center, I don't know if you want to play him as a power forward or a center.
I think that I would put him as a center personally.
But I wouldn't put him above Tim Duncan. So there's five. So no, not a top five of all time. No.
It's right there though.
But
right?
He can imagine if he gets another championship. Puts up those similar stats. Wins another ship.
Would you put him above Akeem right now?
Yes.
Can I tell you, I listened to this guy on Fox Sports Radio during the weekend, and someone compared him to Akeem, and this guy blew a fucking gasket defending Akeem. And I sat in the car and listened to this guy on the way to the gym, and I thought, it's okay to let go of the past. It's okay to say, man, Akeem was a motherfucker when he played, but he's not better than Joker. He might be on par. He might be right there at his absolute best. He's probably just as good. But why don't we ever talk about Akeem won those championships when Jordan wasn't around?
And on shortened years, too.
One of them was. Why don't we talk? Why I feel like people don't talk about that enough when Jokic won this championship. And everybody was healthy. Like, he played against LeBron. He played against Cat. He played against AD. He played against Bam. He played against great fucking centers the entire time, and he beat them all. And he put up unbelievable monster fucking stats, and not in a Westbrook or Harden way where you're like, or a LeBron way, where you're like, this motherfucker's just stat filling. No, everything he was doing was conducive to the team winning and being successful. Like, there were times where you'd go, there were times where I'm watching the game and I'm going, he's not being aggressive enough. Like, I know he's getting into his rhythm and this is what he does, but that motherfucker just needs to take the ball and go to the basket 4 or 5 times, and then he would. Like, he's so fucking good right now. I think he's right there. I think he's scratching the surface on 5 or 6, Jess.
100%. I can agree with that. And to, again, another piggyback off the Hakeem Olajuwon thing. Not only is it okay to let go of the past, but it's okay to create, like, multiple comparisons. Like, I heard people say, hey, look, you know, he's not dominant in the paint like Shaq was, yeah, but he's a bigger dude who's harder to control in the paint like Shaq. He also has a great jumper. Hakeem Olajuwon was one of the first, like, actual centers that created a jumper, including the fact that you can't forget the dream shake. And his little hook shot that he had. It's okay to say, hey, Joker's just as good, if not better, in these areas, but Hakeem's still a motherfucker when he played. He still got, you know, championships. He still did his thing. It was a different era. Like, I'm going to take that out of Michael Jordan's book, right? Michael Jordan says it all the time. We played in a different era. These guys play in a different era. It's tough to say, like, who's a GOAT and who's not, because he, you know, Jordan himself said, I think that every era has a GOAT. There were great centers that time frame, and that, like, you know, late 80s through like the late 90s had a great run of just stacked centers, but the league was built different. Now we don't really have a lot of centers like we know it back then. We don't have the back to the basket type centers. We have guys like Cat who likes to take jumpers. We have guys like AD who still will play defense, but typically will, you know, feels better space into the court.
Or he wants to be at the top of the key.
And Jokic just happens to have found this sweet spot where he can both play at the top and in the back to the basket, and he just does it really well.
So, I'm an enormous fan of Jokic, and I think that, to piggyback off of what you're saying, he may not, I mean, you know, 2-inch vertical, we've all made that joke.
Yeah.
His touch is so soft, and it's crazy to me how we have so many guys in the league that when they get by the basket, they're so aggressive because they're going up aggressively. So they're being aggressive, right? But the ball will bounce off of that rim because they're putting too much oomph behind it. They're too aggressive. As opposed to everything Jokic throws at the rim, it just bounces around. It's you never get that full swish with anything with him by the basket. When he shoots those threes, it's another story.
True.
But when he's close to that 3-foot, 5-foot bunny hop shot, that shot right in the key that he shoots in between the free throw line and the circle, it just kind of bounces around and goes in. It's never too far left. It's never too far right. It just tends to roll. It's such a fucking soft touch shooter's roll. I almost want to say it reminds me of McHale, but I think McHale had a little bit of a oomph behind his shit because he was a bit of a physical cat. But Listen, you're gonna get people blowing Jokic for the next, I don't know,
at least year, 3 months, 9 months,
4 months, 6 months, right? We've done enough of that. You're going to get enough of that. There's 1,000 podcasts right now.
Last thing, I just want to say one more thing. We're talking about the camaraderie. Jay, you mentioned all the time since the beginning of the season, teams got to gel. They got to have, what, like 40, 50 games to gel, right? You just got to have that time. This Denver Nuggets team should have already won a championship already. Either whether it would have been last year or the year before, definitely not last year so much, but the year before that, they had a great run. Jamal Murray gets hurt in the playoffs, and then the whole Nuggets offense just falls. It just crumbles. So this team has been good. And then what I heard last night was as Jamal Murray approaches Jokic, he tells him, hey, man, he says, thank you. And Joker says, of course, you know, you're welcome, man. He goes, no, thank you for being patient with me. Thank you for waiting for me. Thank you for waiting for my time. And that just, that's to me, just goes to show the type of, you know, we definitely give a lot of respect to the Heat culture in that locker room built by Eric Spoelstra and those guys. And they deserve every bit of that respect. But you got to start laying some respect on that Nuggets locker room, man. That, if you want to call it Nuggets culture or whatever, Mile High culture, whatever you want to do, you got to start throwing some respect on that locker room, because those guys truly play for each other. They love each other. They are in line, as far as I'm concerned, to win the championship next year. And again, it all hinges on health, but the respect and love that those guys have for each other. Look at Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon was basically a nobody at this point in time in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's throwing down 30 points, you know, and not every game. It's just like,
here's
you said,
what I want. Here's my last.
They wait for those mismatches and they play off those damn mismatches. Aaron Gordon's out there throwing down 30 points in a playoff game, and then the next game he has nine.
Did I do my Rasheed Wallace comparison?
Let's hear it.
Yeah. So the Detroit Pistons had two guys that were just their shooters. It was Tayshaun Prince and it was fucking Rip Hamilton. And these guys knew during their championship run, these guys are going to shoot majority of the shots. Tayshaun's going to get a lot of open shots. Rasheed Wallace had no problem going, I know I'm a former all-star. I know I'm a former number one. I know I'm a former that guy. But I have no problem deferring, playing really, really hard defense, talking my shit, and being the third or fourth option. Once Gordon figured this out, they became a championship team. Once he figured out, I can be Rasheed Wallace. I can get to the basket. I don't have to score 20 a night. But when I'm called on, I'm going to do it. I'm going to play the best guy on defense. I'm going to play defense against the best offensive player in every series, and I'm going to give him fits. I'm going to be physical as all fuck. I'm going to rebound. And I'm going to rely on my athleticism by the rim. And that shit worked. It was fucking Rasheed Wallace with the Detroit Pistons when they won their championship. It just, I couldn't believe that. I can't believe I'm the only person making that fucking comparison.
That is a fantastic comparison.
I'm honestly surprised I'm the only person. Thank you. So we'll end it on this, Jess, because we can't end it without gambling. Are you ready for the 2023 odds?
Ooh, do you have them up? Let's hear them.
Of course I do. 2023-2024. The number one team, Jess. Who do you think it is? Very close. They are number two.
Okay.
Number one is the Nuggets.
Okay, good, good.
Number two, Boston. Do you want to give me number three?
Number three, I'm going to say the Bucks.
God, are you reading the same list that I am?
I'm not reading.
Are you back at the good old thelines.com? Shout out thelines.com. The Bucks are third, anywhere from a +650 to a +600 to a +700, followed by the Suns, which are a +850, +900, +700. And then it gets weird. Uh-oh. You got the Lakers, God, the Warriors, and the Sixers. 1,200, 1,200, 1,300.
You know, I'm actually okay with all those odds. I'm okay with them.
Heat +2,000, yeah. 25 +2,500 on MGM.
Let's be real. One last time for the people out there listening, you NBA fans, all you guys.
We love you.
We love you. But this was a magical run. I already blew Miami. Okay, it's a magical run. I already told you. I think that their wins were more quality than the Nuggets.
But, I don't agree with that, by the way.
But this shit ain't happening again. It ain't going down like that. This is like one of those once every 10-year type runs. Like, you don't see this stuff every year. It doesn't happen every year. It doesn't even happen during the season like that.
No.
This was a magical run put on by Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Buckets and crew. Like, it was magical.
It was an unbelievable run, like you said, piggybacking off of you, that hit its wall when they faced a team that was just way better offensively.
All around.
That's it. The better team won the series, which is usually what happens when you get this team.
It just didn't happen in the Eastern Conference.
And every other series. Jess, hit the wrap it up button. We made it. I got nothing left.
All right, folks. That's it. Basketball season's over. Football season isn't quite ready, but we will have stuff for you.
You're going to have to feel it like a motherfucker the next 2 months, let me tell you.
It's going to be a lot of talk about weightlifting and all sorts of crazy stuff. Folks, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being patient with us while we took our short hiatus. We'll try to get back next week if we got stuff to talk about. Thanks for all the old listeners. Thanks for any of the new listeners. Shout out to Variety Sports on Twitter. You can follow them at @Variety_Sports_. You can follow the podcast at Team Toss 21. You can follow Jay on Twitter at Valdez spelled backwards 559. I'm not there anymore, but when I do come back, you'll be able to follow me. Pencil this in at JTT81 and
Shout out Smash Squad MMA. Shout out Jay, Chef Jay Rollins. Shout Justin out Al Wallen with an O. We got to hit all the boys. Shout out
Allen with a zero.
He wants to come on the show very badly, so maybe we can have him on next.
That's going
to
be some debauchery. We need Phillip, so imagine if we had Allen and Jay.
They're trying to do their own show. I'm telling you.
Maybe they should start a show and we'll go on theirs.
I love that idea.
Folks, everybody that listens, everybody that we followed on Twitter for years and years and years, we love you.
Happy Father's Day to my fathers out there.
Yes, happy Father's Day to all the fathers coming up. We love you guys, and keep doing your thing. Support, provide, and protect. That's what we're here for. That's it for me.